My name's Bill Osgood, and I am a grateful alcoholic. I want to welcome you all tonight on a kind of a rainy and Thanksgiving week and all kinds of stuff. And I'm just very grateful to be here tonight and see all the friendly faces, some I haven't seen in quite a while. And it's just I really feel honored to be here, to tell you that right away. You know, I always, you can always tell the newcomers in a group, they usually sit kind of up towards the front, and they look like they're sitting in a nice recliner, you know. And then the newcomers are kind of a little more toward the back, and they're kind of sitting, feels like a straight back chair. But the people that I really want to welcome tonight are those that are here on a court slip, because they probably feel like they're sitting on a cactus, because I know that feeling. My first meeting, I was here sitting there on a court slip, and I tell you, I'd rather had a piece of glass broken off in my ass than to be in that meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. So if you're here and you have those feelings, you're in the right place. Because had I stayed after that meeting, that first meeting on that court slip, I'd had 15 more years sobriety. But God saw fit that I needed to go out and get a few more arrows, so I have something to share tonight. But welcome. I want to welcome you. A little history about me. My sobriety date is January 27th, 1989. I am a San Diego native, born and raised. My grandfather actually dredged San Diego Harbor, where the airport sits today. So our family goes back a few years. My main field of occupation, I am a PGA golf professional. So if anybody needs their slice straightened out at the end of the meeting, I'll be here. that's how I made my living. Presently, as a matter of fact, I'm driving a school bus for the La Mesa Spring Valley School District. So as things transition from one time to another, you still have the program of Alcoholics Anonymous along with you along the way. You know, I was always wondered, what is an alcoholic? And I can recall my first experience with an alcoholic when my parents took me up to Long Beach for which would have been my mother's stepfather. And she was having a 60th birthday party. And I always thought it was great. I'd get up to their yard. It was the only time that I went there. And what was nice about the place, they had all these broken down cars out in front of the yard, about four or five of those things. And I was about 8 years old, 7 or 8 years old. And I thought, that was pretty neat. I can go around playing these old cars and stuff. And I could tell who was the alcoholic, because even though it was a birthday party, he was sitting in that front chair watching TV, big recliner, and he had a bucket of quart bottle Schlitz on one side of him, and he had a bucket on the other side over here that he spit in and threw his cigarette butts. And that fellow never moved out of that seat for that entire deal. You could tell he was just angry. You could tell this guy didn't want to have people around him. Sitting there watching TV, and you know, they had the big TV box with the little screen. And that guy never took his eyes off that screen the whole time I was there. So that was my first picture in my mind. I said, as long as I don't drink like that and have beer on one side and a bucket on the other, I'm not an alcoholic. And as I went through school, it was a usual behavior. You know, you would go out on the weekends. Friday night was great. We would go to the football game, and we'd go down and get some beer down in San Ysidro, wait for someone with not too much English-speaking skills to buy us a six-pack of beer. And we'd go up on the hill, watch the football game, and then go to the dance. Unfortunately, I usually was heaving after the second can of beer, and I'd always have vomit splashed on my shoes. I didn't learn quite the way to lean over something. So, and when I'd go to these dances, I couldn't figure out why I wouldn't get a dance or anything like that. I thought it was the way I parted my hair when I had some. It never occurred to me I should have shined my shoes at that point. But it was, and it did the same thing through junior college, drinking on the weekends. I finally got a letter from the college saying, you have been dismissed due to a low GPA. I couldn't figure that out, coming to class drunk most of the time. And besides, I was going to be a touring golf professional. I didn't need this college stuff. But in those days, if you didn't have a school deferment, the Vietnam War was going pretty strong at that time. And I said, you know what? I think I'm going to change my style, and I'm going to join the Air Force. Well, joined the Air Force. Figure, man, I'm going to get my act together now. And was stationed overseas in a R&R center for Vietnam, which was in Taipei, Taiwan, which was a big city, lots of bars and women and all this kind of stuff, and proceeded with that same behavior of drinking and carrying on. And being a good alcoholic, you never missed a day of work. You always found a way to show up to work. Unfortunately, because alcohol was involved, we tend to not make good decisions. And I married a Chinese girl while I was there. And you know what I found out about them? They are great girlfriends. But the minute you said, I do, something happened, Something happened. All of a sudden, it was, you drink too much. You smoke too much. I didn't smoke any more or drink any more or less than when we were dating and around like that. So you always have this conflict, this entire conflict. I couldn't understand it. I thought I was a pretty decent guy, pretty decent husband. Well, one evening, fortunately, I think it was one night that I was sleeping on the bed and she was on the couch, because we kind of had this arrangement. We were back and forth. And all of a sudden, I'm just kind of sitting there half in a daze. I hear, God damn it. And I hear that knife drawer open. And I come out of that bed like a spring, dash for the bathroom, and bam, through that door came a cleaver. Like that, it was like The Shining, That's a. Well, needless to say, I gathered up my golf clubs and headed up to the barracks and finished out my tour of duty at the Air Force. But during that time, just before I was about to separate from the Air Force, I got a letter from San Diego State saying, due to your past junior golf experience and playability, I was the number one junior golfer in San Diego, and they asked me to, you can have a full scholarship to the school and play on the golf team and get an education and all that. Boy, now things are going to change. Now I get rid of this military duty and get into the academic community and that sort of thing. And still, I could not figure out why my golf game wouldn't get any better sitting there drinking, you know, on a daily basis. Before we played golf in matches, the coach found me at the bar drinking wine coolers. I said, well, coach, I just kind of take the edge off, you know, I'm going to get a little excited playing golf. And by the ninth hole, I could hardly stand up at the time. But it was one thing that did happen during that school, while I was going to school, is I was picked up for my first 502, or DUI, as we call them. And, you know, of course, give old dad a call. Hey, dad, I'm down at county jail. Come on down with some money. Bail me out. And sure enough, got done with that. And it's an amazing thing, whether it's coincidental or ironic, the person that was bartending that night is also here tonight. Isn't that amazing? Miracles never cease in this program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And as I recall, I remember blowing a .19, you know, and I thought, wow, that's, you know, now I'm like most other people. Everybody's got one 502, for crying out loud. Yeah, it's almost like a badge of honor. In those days, this would have been in the mid-70s or so. But I was, the judge thought at that time that I should attend meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I went over to the South Bay Pioneers. I mean, maybe familiar. It's in the Chula Vista area. And I proceeded over there. I parked in the parking lot and stayed in my car until the meeting was over. That was my first AA meeting. And you hear people here on court slips saying, you know, getting the cotton out of your ears. Well, I never went into the meeting to see that. I was so racked with fear, I didn't want what these people had. And the next time, it was probably a couple of days later, I finally got up enough courage to go and sit down. And, of course, you take the seat closest to the door. And there was one thing in that building that was not going to get stolen that night, and that was the clock on the wall. Because I had my eye on that sucker the entire time of that meeting. But the one thing about that is that I never heard the message of recovery. What my brain was telling me and hearing was tumultuous marriages, 502s, loss of work, geographics, and I never heard the message of recovery. It just did not get into my brain. And I proceeded to finish school, go to the meetings. I can remember some of the bartenders even signing off on some of the court slips. I said, I think I only went to about three of those, and I was not ready for this type of action. And so I finished school and got my diploma and was waiting for opportunity to knock on the door, which never did. You know, who's going to hire somebody like me? Got into the construction just as a laborer, basically, hanging drywall and doing all that kind of stuff. And there again, being in that field, you drink, go to the bars after work and do all that kind of stuff. Next thing you know, hey, Dad, I'm down at county jail. Can you come down and pick me up? Yeah, same old thing. Well, after a while, got a job as a bartender at a golf course. Well, now things are going to be a little bit different. I'm out of that construction environment, and I'm going to just kind of ease in and pour a few toddies for the boys and just kind of enjoy myself, maybe have one myself once in a while. And There again, I met one of the waitresses there who drank like I did. Why, this is a match made in heaven, you know. So we got married, and lo and behold, after the marriage, it wasn't, you know, you drink too much or anything like that. So we went along pretty good for a while until about 2.5, 3 years later, she says, "I'm pregnant." Now the drinking stopped. Now I lost my drinking buddy. Now you get this same type of feeling and this tumultuous. You drink, you're drinking a little too much, you know. Says, no, not any more than before, you know. So this went on for a while. And then finally we had two children and raising them, and after I was through bartending, my stepbrother asked me to come out to the golf course and be a pro. I hadn't been doing any of the golfing business after college. I really got away from it. I was doing it my whole life, and I thought that, you know, being a golf professional would be very nice. And plus, hey, I can start all over again, you know, get ready to get out of this bar business and stuff, you know. And it just, once I started becoming a golf professional, you talk about an alcoholic's dream. My stepbrother, who's also an alcoholic, and the part owner and manager was an alcoholic. So my day started off, check in at 5 in the morning, put on a pot of coffee, right over to the brandy, put the brandy in the coffee, back behind the counter, do some work. A couple hours later, kind of ease into a little vodka and orange juice. And as the day wore on, maybe in the late morning, and then do a little vodka rocks. And then my shift was over. This was great. Now I can go to the bar and drink, you know. And I would usually have a few drinks at the bar. And then if I hadn't had enough on the way home, I kept a half gallon of vodka under the seat and drank a few sips on the way home if I wasn't tight enough as it was. And during that time, when I was drinking to that amount, I probably drank, I want to say that I drank that way for about 7 or 8 years straight through, you know. And then something happened, you know. I always love that in a talk when something happens. How can an alcoholic go from a stumble bum to being a member of Alcoholics Anonymous just overnight? But what happened was I had my children with me. It was one day, I want to say it was probably in the fall of 88. And I took them out to hit some range balls and had them out. My daughter was 2 years old. My son was about 5. And on the way home from that, I had always carried a bottle of vodka in the car. And, of course, drinking it as I drive, but I had the kids in the back with the car seats. After all, I was a responsible parent keeping the kids in the car seat. So I'm taking this hit on this bottle with a brown wrapper on it. My son says, "What are you drinking?" I say, "Well, it's Daddy's medicine, you know." And he said something very profound. He said, "Are you sick?" And at that moment, something happened. When he said, and it just took me back, you know, and I said, you know, I think I am sick. I think I could be sick. And I went from that point at that juncture into a solution way of thinking. And I remember back, the judge that sent me to that first meeting on a court slip, I knew there was a solution to this, to alcoholism. And it was ironic that, you just never know. They say you get this program in seconds and inches. If something had been just a little different, you wouldn't have got it. Or something had been just a little out of place, you wouldn't have seen the message. And there was a fellow named Paul that used to come out and play golf. And I'd only seen him a few times. And I, for whatever reason, I knew he was in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I went in there one day. It was a Saturday morning, and he came by, and I said, "Paul, I believe I need some help with my drinking." And he said, "Don't drink, and come to the Sunday night Old Town Speakers meeting up on Kearney Mesa." You know, some of you recall that meeting. And okay, this was a Saturday morning, so I didn't drink on Sunday, and I showed up at that meeting, and it was like a miracle. And I've heard it said before, you walked into this room, and all I saw then were smiling faces. I saw people that had recovered from alcoholism. I didn't see all the stories, all the bad things. I saw recovery in that room, and I knew I was home. I just knew it. All of a sudden, a great weight came off my shoulders. And Paul came over to me and he said, "Bill, it's good to see you," as if I wasn't going to be there, it was probably amazing to him that I showed up. But I knew that I was in the right place. And he comes over and he says, "Look, Bill, they got a seat right in here in front for you." "Oh, how do you like that?" He was part of the steering committee and stuff like that. "Oh, that's great. Gee, I got here kind of late and there's a seat up front for me." It didn't occur to me that he had obviously had it saved for me. Lo and behold, they usually have the book drawing at the end where you pull out your tickets. Oh, guess what? I won. I just thought I was lucky. And a few years later, once I came to, I said, "I think he rigged that thing." In fact, I'm almost sure he did. What are the chances being your really first AA meeting and win a big book? It really is incredible. So, Paul, one thing about Paul, that as we were going through the steps, he made every step special. All 12. It wasn't just boom, boom, boom. They were all individual steps. They each had their own different place where we did them, their different time of day. It was just special. And we would go around with kind of our posse of people, and we were doing 6 meetings a week, and I would be coffee maker at one, clean up person at another, picking up cigarette butts out of the parking lot. Every meeting that we went to, I was involved some way. And that first year was just fantastic. I just delved into AA. But something along the way that when you have a family in that first year, that my wife at that time seemed like my family had now become Alcoholics Anonymous, and her family with the kids and everything was kind of second. And there again, it was that round and round argument, that when you walk into the room, there's this heavy air into the room. And you know, some of you know what I'm talking about, that you just, and it would be best for me to leave at that point, even with the kids. And I remember it was just before Christmas, because my sobriety, I had to take care of myself first. And then I told myself I would come back for those kids, because I didn't want to leave them in her care, because she had other problems of her own that would have to be taken care of at a later time. And so I stayed. I had to leave that. Oh, hey, Dad, guess what? Clear out the back bedroom. I'm coming home. And we did the meetings and the whole thing. And after, I want to say, about two years, I had to, Paul came over and said, guess what? We're going to go over to my sponsor's yard and pull weeds. And, you say, well, where does it say that in the big book? You know, you're going to pull. Well, it says right here, we'll go to any length, Go to any length to stay sober. You know, they always, those guys always have that catch in there, And it occurred to me at the time, just staying busy in Alcoholics Anonymous just wasn't enough. There was something there that, going around, going for coffee after the meetings and all that just wasn't enough. And there was a fellow that I would see at the meetings, and this person just glowed with the program. And his name was Don T. from Santee. And I wanted what he had, because he had something there that you really couldn't put your finger on it, but you just knew it, You just had that feeling about him, and did I want what he had. I wanted that glow that he had. And so I told Paul that, that he saved my life, and I'm going to be moving on to another sponsor, which, as you grow in this program, that does happen. But I do want to read, when I asked Donnie to be my sponsor, he said, I want you to read something out of the book, which I believe he made all his sponsees read. And I want to read you this little chapter out of the book that he made me read to him, which really set the foundation for our working together. Said, almost none of us like the self-searching, the leveling of our pride, the confession of shortcomings which the process requires for its successful consummation. But we saw that it really worked in others, and we had come to believe in the hopelessness and futility of life as we had been living it. When therefore we were approached by those in whom the problem had been solved, there was nothing left for us but to pick up the simple kit of spiritual tools laid at our feet. We have found much of heaven, and we have been rocketed into a fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed. And that's what set that whole thing about our being together. That's it, that set of spiritual tools. And he would take us around. We'd, again, have a posse of people, and we would go listen to speakers, and we would go here and there and everywhere. And what it was this really internal cleansing, getting everything out of your system in order to let God inside. And once God was there, you just felt this lightness about yourself. And as you get into this digging out of all these old behaviors, like it's just like the steps trying to clear away this wreckage, but it seemed like it was much deeper and deeper, getting really down in there. And I can remember at that time, because Donnie would always say, it's all about getting free. Just getting free, being comfortable in your own skin, which I never really felt until we had worked together and done all these kind of things. It was a great honor to be with him and to do all that stuff. And I'd felt so blessed to have learned those things that he had basically taught me, that I could move out of getting my, feeling the need to continue with what he was doing. At that time, while we were working together, I was giving lessons out on the golf course, and I had a fine young lady giving lessons too. And we were actually out on the course, and I said something to the effect, and I think I brought up a something about the program, some kind of catchphrase that I use. And she asked me, "Are you in Alcoholics Anonymous?" I said, "Well, as a matter of fact, I am. I have about 4 years, and I'm thinking I'm wondering how many months she's gotten the program, and I hasten to say, are you in Alcoholics? Well, yes, I am. Well, how much time do you have? 18 years. Oh, my God. Well, that kind of set me back there. As we spent some time together, I knew that this was the person I would want to spend the rest of my life with, and truly blessed in that fashion, and we were married, and then we started putting together a plan to recover the children out of the marriage. And if anybody knows in California, trying to get a court or whatever to get your children back is very difficult and very expensive. And we would go from therapist to lawyer to the judge, back to therapy and psychovals and all this kind of stuff. But it was the thing in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous that teaches you to just keep doing the footwork, do the work, and the results will come. And eventually we had custody of the children and probably saved their lives. Really did. It was really that profound, that of the work that we did to get them back. And there again, it's all due to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I had gotten away from some of the meetings, hadn't gone to meetings because my wife was in the program, her sister was in the program, and her sister's husband was in the program. So again, we had this little posse that we kind of hung out around, and all of a sudden I got a call from my friend back east telling me that my sponsor, Donnie, took his own life. And I hadn't seen him for several months. I'd kind of lost contact with him. And I just had these serious feelings of guilt that, gee, you know, if I'd only been there, I could have done something. He had helped me so much. He had changed my life so much. And I had this feeling that I had abandoned him somehow. And it took a while to get over that. But during that time, it was so difficult to think about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and not think of Don T. I could not get away from that. And so, as I was living my life, Alcoholics Anonymous had really changed my life. And to allow me to raise my kids. And once they were gone out of the house and everything, about 3 years ago, I started coming back to the meetings of the Water Walkers, where I first, it was one of the first meetings that I ever attended. And before I'm just finishing up here, I want to just say a couple words about my dad, because he was always the one that I called when I got in trouble. He was the one that bailed me out. He had room at the house. And when I was working at the golf course, I thought I was solid there for years to come. And they had a management change, and the next thing you know, they came in and said, well, we don't need your services anymore. And what happened was, what God did for me, He allowed me to spend that last year of my father's life with Him, taking care of Him, feeding Him, seeing that He got down to bed at night, changed his diapers, and everything like that. Had I not realized, you know, had I stayed working, I would have missed that time we spent together for his last year. All the things that he had done for me for 60 years. And God says, you know what, Bill, you're going to give him his last year. You're going to spend some time together. And once again, God was doing for me what I could not do for myself. And I felt so grateful to have that time with Him in that last year. And, when I went in on the day that He died, I went in the morning and He was gone. And I thanked Him once again for being a great father. Before that, you know, he had told me, he said, Bill, you know, there's a beer in the refrigerator. It's the last one. You can go ahead and have that. See, he did not know that I was in Alcoholics Anonymous for almost 20 years. Because it's, you know, I wasn't doing it for him. I wasn't going to disappoint him by drinking. And I wasn't going to disappoint myself by drinking. But if I were to drink, I would have disappointed God. And that's the main thing. Because when my father passed away, I just felt that he had done so much for me. And, you know, death is really life death is really life on a different frequency. And he's in a far better place. But it was one of those things that I would not have done by myself. God knew that his time was up, and God was going to see that I spent some time with him. And for that, I am grateful, and I thank you for spending time with me today. Thank you very much for having me.